Since every time we hear Ahmadinejad's name, we have to hear about his statement about the Holocaust and his statement about wanting to destroy Israel, let's hope every time we hear Vilna's name, we're going to hear his ambiguous statements about wanting to inflict a catastrophe or a Holocaust on the Palestinians. Of course, that's never going to happen because of a double standard. Yeah.
Recently, Arun Gandhi was asked to resign from the Mohandas Gandhi Institute for Nonviolence for speaking out against the State of Israel. You were also asked to resign. What do you think the academia of the U.S. stands to gain by stifling the voice of professors, specifically when dealing with Israel? I don't see it so much when concerning other regions of the world, but when one speaks against the atrocities being put forth by the Israelis, there tends to be a stifling. Why do you think that is, and who stands to gain from that stifling?
Well, I mean, obviously there are what else can you put? There's thuggish behavior that's engaged in order to stifle discussion of this topic. And I learned today on the way here that somebody passed the information on to me. It even happened to the director of the War and Peace program here at your school, that pressure was applied by a person to not let me speak here. She, as a member of the program, spoke her mind and said they had a right to be here, and she was disciplined for it. And the problem is, so much of that goes on behind people's backs. And I hope that now that you're aware that happened, you will go and try to find out the facts for yourself. And if we show a little courage in defending elementary and uncomplicated principles, you know, of the right to hear dissenting points of view, I think you can beat back these kinds of tactics. The problem is twofold. A lot of it happens behind the scenes. You don't know that these pressures are being exerted, but they are. And secondly, people don't show the kinds of elementary courage that they should in the face of these tactics. It's one of the ironies, if I can editorialize here for a moment, it's one of the ironies I find about the whole academic freedom issue and tenure issue, of which I know we have a representative from the law school sitting right in front of me who knows much more about than me. But my experience has been the most cowardly are always the tenured faculty. And it's the junior faculty, the adjunct faculty, the ones who have everything to lose, who end up rallying for you, and the tenured faculty who always figure out ways to say we have to move on and heal the wounds, and too bad, that bad, he's been thrown to the wolves, you know, that kind of cowardice. But I'm not so fearful if people would simply do the minimum that needs to be done to preserve and protect basic rights and basic principles. And I hope in the case of this woman, I guess her name is Kathy Pearson. Is that her name?
Andreessen.
You know, if she was disciplined for defending the right of me to be here, then the people who disciplined her should be called to account. It's just as simple as that. But you can't, you know, constantly complain and not do anything. Yeah.
Hi. I agree with your right to speak, and I found myself nodding in affirmative at many things that you had to say. But I also have to say that as a person who went to high school in Iran before the Shah was kicked out of the revolution, and as a person who was raised as a Northern European Lutheran, and I just found out that he was of Jewish heritage only 15 years ago. During my time in the Middle East when I was in high school, at the time of the Yom Kippur War, it was apparent to us, first let me state that at that time, Iran was a very egalitarian state as far as people of different religions living together. There were a lot of Jews in the government there. A lot of Jews were in my high school, graduating class. We all got along together fine. But before the Yom Kippur War, there was a drumbeat of anti-Semitic statements that gradually, eventually, my Jewish fellow schoolmates had to deal with, and quite a few of them left the country. And I also went to Lebanon at the same time and stood and went down to Syria and stood on the Golan Heights. And you said a lot of things that sound very, very simple and scholarly, but if you stand on the Golan Heights and look across and can see that cannons placed on the Golan Heights have access to almost all of Israel, and it's a perfect strategic place to launch an attack, that all these statements are like, these people should give this back, there's a reason why they don't want to give the Golan Heights back, because it's a perfect place to launch missiles and shoot artillery from. And I think that to expect Israel to follow international law for the first time, I mean, we got all of the southwest of the United States by grabbing land after a war. So what country?
Let's give it back.
The war that we created.
So what country? Why should this country be forced to follow international law when no other country in the world has had? Every other country in the world has gained land by war. And the fact is, the war that they gained land in, they didn't start.
Well, you've said many things there, and I'm not sure. There, point to one question you'd like me to answer, because each of the statements you made requires a fairly complicated response.
I know that.
So if you point to one, would you like to? I don't want to choose it because it's,
okay.
It seems as if I'm changing.
My first point was that I recognize that the Israelis have made a lot of mistakes. The Palestinians have made a lot of mistakes, but I think they've been used as a patsy by many Arab states to continue the fight, which they don't have to deal with. Because when I lived in Iran, refugees.
I'm happy to answer you, but you're putting me in a difficult position of you becoming a moving target. Just give me one question. Would you like me to answer?
How can you solve this problem if there are these states behind the scenes that are always
a reasonable question. The question is, how can you expect to resolve the question in isolation from its neighbors, which according to you either are trying to stir up or manipulate or somehow use the Palestinians against Israel? That's a perfectly reasonable question. And as I said to you earlier, under the proposed settlement for the Israel-Palestine conflict, I said calls upon the future Palestinian state, and I said, I'm pretty careful in my language, neighboring Arab states to recognize Israel's right to live in peace and free from threats or use of force. Okay, that's the statement. It seems to be responsive. Now, what does the record show? The record shows in April 2002, the Arab League put forth a proposal under Saudi, the Crown Prince then, Crown Prince Abdullah, for resolving Israel-Palestine conflict. The proposal he put forth was recognition of Israel within its June 1967 borders, what he used, using the language of the UN Resolution 242, a just resolution of the refugee question, and he said he went beyond the terms of the international consensus. It called for, the resolution he put forth, it called for normalization of relations with Israel, meaning economic relations, trade relations, tourism, and so forth. That proposal was passed 22-0. The entire Arab League supported it. That same initiative was repeated in March 2007. All the Arab states, I should add, Iran is on board supporting that position. They vote that way every year in the United Nations. So if you say the problem is the neighboring Arab states, that problem has been resolved. It's right there on the record.
Except for those Arab states have never accepted the Palestinians in their own borders.
Let's say that's true. You see, this is becoming the moving target again. A moment ago, you said the problem was Israel. Now you want to switch it to the problem is the Palestinian refugees. No Arab state is responsible under international law for the Palestinian refugees, any more than any neighboring state was responsible for the Kurds. The country that expelled them has a responsibility under international law, the right of return or compensation. That too. I noticed that when it came to Israel, you put international law in quotations, like it doesn't apply to Israel. But that's the problem. Nothing applies to Israel. International law doesn't apply to Israel. United Nations resolutions don't apply to Israel. International Court of Justice advisory opinion doesn't apply to Israel. Then let's be honest. Israel is an outlaw state with your support.
Sign. I think maybe what we ought to do, we have some ground to cover, and I think what you can do is when we have a break in the ante room, if you want to talk to our guest, Ben, ask him a question, let's do that. You've been very patient. Can we have one more round of applause? What we typically do every February, our March Peace Stage program has a Nobel Peace Prize celebration. But before we get into this, and it won't take long, Michael Ugarte, who is the distinguished former director of the Peace Studies program, he wants to make a brief announcement.
What Professor Finkelstein being said about wonderful to talk, but let's take to action. I'm distributing information about a demonstration we're planning against the Iraq war. I have a feeling that after the election works itself out, we'll still have this as a problem. So if you would like this information, pick up the leaflet. It's March 16th. We'll be meeting at 1:30 at the Courthouse Square, March 16th.
And I'd just like to add, I'm actually making the drums for the march this year, so if there's any artists that want to be a part of the drum corps in any way, I would love your help, and if so, see me out in the lobby.
Thank you, Michael. Now, I've asked, speaking of distinguished colleagues, I've asked my colleague, Dr. Kirk Sorbic, who's emeritus from chemical engineering, to say a few words about the 2007 Nobel Peace Prize winner, Vice President Al Gore. Or maybe it's President Al Gore.
I do intend to make these remarks short. I have 1 minute. So I'm going to take a little more than 1 minute. And I'm going to tell you a little bit about Al Gore.